Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast, where you get to learn everything you want to know about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Angela Pugh, co-founder of Kansas City Recovery, life coach, and recovering alcoholic. To learn more about me, you can listen to episode zero on your podcast app or find us on the web at addictionunlimited.com. Hey there. Welcome to episode number 147 of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. I'm your coach, Angela Pugh. Thank you for hanging out with me today and spending some time listening to the pod. Love and appreciate all of you for sure. Man, we've had a crazy month. January was just action-packed. We did the five-day Go Dry Challenge. It was amazing. I'm so impressed with how many people showed up and were engaged those whole 5 days. I went live in our pop-up Facebook group every day. It was so much fun. And I was so crazy nervous, like doing all of it, because it's just nerve-wracking when you're doing live video for sure. But it was awesome. It really was. And it was some good growth for me too. And seeing all you guys there when I go live and in your comments and saying hello, I just so appreciate it. And it helps my nerves a ton. So thank you for that. And video is going to be a big part of 2021 for us. I am going to do regular weekly live videos, and we're getting that all planned out right now, me and my team. And I'm pretty excited about it now. So that's going to be fun. We also, the Sober Society membership was open for new members for a period of time, and we launched a VIP level membership, which is incredible and really a great and inexpensive opportunity to work with me. So in the VIP level membership, it's all the same stuff, but we'll do a live webinar every month and a live group coaching experience with me every month. So that's going to be a blast. And the last thing I want to mention before we jump into this episode, which is awesome, by the way, the next round of the 6 week signature coaching program is getting ready to start. And this is 6 weeks. You walk away with a complete plan. There's a lot of one-on-one. So space is very limited because there's a lot of one-on-one with me, with each person. So, and we do group stuff as well, but if the idea of giving up alcohol and everything it represents is overwhelming, like you're thinking, where do you start? How do I do it? What do I tell people? And if you're like so many people too, it feels like you're alone in the struggle. And it seems like the hard part really for people is what to do day to day to stay on track. And that's all the stuff that we do in the 6 week signature coaching program. And the next round of that is starting in a couple of weeks. So if you're interested in that, it's on myrecoverytoolbox.com, the 6 week signature coaching program. You can find out everything you want to know. You do a consultation with me. I put a video on that page to talk a little bit about it. So watch the video. If you want to jump on a call with me and talk through it and get some questions answered, just sign up for a consultation and we'll get you all squared away. But I'm super excited about that. I love that program. It's so much fun. And we all get to be so close. Like, we really have our tribe that is amazing and so much fun and so supportive. So that is the only plug I have today. Is if you're interested in that, jump in, because in a couple of weeks we're going to start that program and space is super limited. So on today's episode, you're going to love this, because I love bringing different things to you guys about sober life. You know, I think people don't really understand the whole world that is available out there as a sober person, like all the things we can do and ways to have fun as a sober person. And I came across Duke in my research online. You know, I'm always researching to find good and interesting guests, and Duke popped up on my radar. I don't know where. I mean, honestly, probably Instagram. You guys know me and the gram. I love Instagram. So I find Duke, and he has a sober entertainment company, okay? It's called Sober AF Entertainment, and they do sober people events, sober people gatherings, I guess, at concerts, sporting events, and music festivals. Like, how cool is that? So I'm not going to go on and on about him because his episode is really awesome. He is a sober guy himself, and he put this thing together for his kids, and I'm going to let him tell you all about it. So thank you for spending this time with me. Love you guys. Here's Duke. Duke, first of all, let me just say thank you so much for coming on and doing this show with me. I'm really excited to tell our listeners about you and your company. So let's just start there. Why don't you take a couple of minutes and tell everybody a little bit about you?
Sure. Angela, thank you very much. My name is Duke Rumley. I'm the executive director and founder of a nonprofit called Sober AF Entertainment. We create safe spaces in fun places. I'm a guy who is 31 years sober, which means I was getting in all kinds of trouble up to that point, and I had a very intense experience with alcohol. I'm a father of a 20 and 16-year-old boy and girl, and they were having issues. They weren't really having the issues as much as their friends and community. My daughter was at Red Rocks, and there was an intense, or she called me that she wanted to take an Uber home, and I finally figured out what was going on, and a bunch of her friends had taken ecstasy, and she didn't feel safe driving home with them. And I thought it was BS that these kids are growing up in a time that the only culture is this party drug culture, and it was killing 70,000 kids every year. And I didn't want to get that phone call that my kid was dead and I didn't do anything about it beforehand. So my daughter and I founded Sober AF Entertainment as a secondary culture at music festivals, concerts, and sporting events, where we host sober sections and throw sober tailgates to help build a community of people having fun at really fun places, but they're all sober.
Yeah, I love that. I'm glad you explained it too, because I was going to say, what does that mean in fun places? So it's all of these venues. When you do something at a concert, is it also like tailgating, like something in the parking lot kind of thing? Or do you have booths? I mean, it's been a long time since I've been to a concert, honestly, but I know that they have separate booths for like mixed drinks and things like that. Are you guys doing something like that inside the show, or are you really setting up and tailgating, just providing a safe space in parking lots?
So what we've learned, it's really easy to do this at sporting events because they typically need help selling tickets. Music venues don't need our help selling tickets. They sell out so quickly. So typically, if it's a music festival, we'll contact them beforehand. We'll get 8 or 10 free tickets to the festival, and we'll set up a sober support tent inside the festival. So they are very supportive of us, you know, trying to help people who are looking to stay off drugs, stay off drugs. But if it's a concert, what we typically do locally is we'll get the word out. We'll all get tickets. We'll throw up yellow balloons out of the back of the car, and we'll let everyone know, you know, for Red Rocks, we're at the upper parking lot on the north side, so people know where to find us. And we'll, you know, pull out food and have some non-alcoholic drinks, and then we'll all go into the venue together and sit together. So that's usually general admission. So we'll do like a 2-hour tailgate beforehand and then go get in line maybe 30 minutes before the doors open so we can all kind of go sit together and get some good seats. But for sporting events, we'll contact the sporting venue. We'll get a couple hundred seats reserved half off for us. We'll get a link to that. We'll get the word out to the community, and then we'll throw sober tailgate. We've partnered with the Phoenix, which is a sober gym free group that's based out of Denver, and they're about five blocks away from Coors Field. And what we've learned is, like, you have to make it really fun, because if people just show up and, you know, there's not cornhole or wiffle ball, or, you know, they're not looking to stand around and talk about their feelings, right? We are, and we have to kind of respect that, you know, sober can be awkward, right? The first 10 minutes of showing up at an event, it's our job to make sure you're having fun, be it a big screen TV with earlier games on, or wiffle ball's been a big hit. Also, we can set up cornhole, and, you know, and then after about 10 minutes, everyone kind of pushes through that awkwardness of showing up and not knowing anyone, or only knowing a couple people, and then they can all have fun and mingle together. And then we all try to walk over together and enjoy the game, and then try to walk back together, and, you know, just make sure this kind of safe environment applies for men and women. And we can all, you know, be able to say, hey, that was such a great experience, and when's the next one?
Yeah, it's so good to recognizing that sober people need entertainment, because it is, I mean, it's hilarious to me how bored we get. You know, like, this is something I hear in my private communities for sure, is people talking about being bored, and what do? And how do you have fun? And I remember, even for myself, I remember my sponsor saying to me one time really early on in my sobriety, he said, he's like, Angela, do you just expect a circus to follow you around? And the second you sit down, they pop out and entertain you. And I was like, well, yeah, that doesn't sound bad. I mean, do you know of such a thing? And thinking about it now is much different, right? I'm much older and all of those things, but you're exactly right. Like, we are not people to stand around, be bored, not have anything to do. We do have an expectation of some sort of entertainment. And we don't seem to be great at providing it for ourselves. You know, like, everybody is always like, I'm bored. My sponsor said to me, if you're bored, you're being boring. Like, right. That's your responsibility. Like, go do something, right? Stop sitting around worrying about being bored. Go do something. And I learned a lot from that. But yeah, just recognizing that and having some things for people to channel their energy into, and icebreakers, because you're exactly right. We all, most of us, have that social anxiety. It is going to be awkward the first few minutes. You don't know anybody. It's weird. To have something else to focus on is fantastic.
So, especially in early sobriety, I mean, I just kind of watch what we've done at our 64 events, and kind of the aha moment is watching this, you know, newly sober, like 62 day sober guy who, you know, doesn't know that there's an community out there like this, like him, wanting to have fun. So for me, I got sober at 21. I was into the Grateful Dead. I definitely had this need to kind of push the envelope or go to the edge and, you know, and not fall off, but kind of visit it. And I had seen, I think, 15 Grateful Dead shows by the time I got sober at 21 years old. And I knew that there was a sober support group inside the Grateful Dead called the Wharf Rats. And just knowing that little bit, like, hey, you can get sober, but you can still do badass things, like go to a Grateful Dead show for 3 days and then go back to college for the next month and go to meetings. And, you know, I had a very supportive family. I just had a lot of really good things going for me that made sobriety at such a young age a lot easier. And I'm very appreciative of that. But one of them knowing was, hey, that there is this really cool sober support group at Grateful Dead shows. So I ended up going to another 25 Dead shows over the next, I think, 6 years. And I kind of learned how to have fun at concerts sober, you know, bring a sober wingman always made it a little more fun. But, you know, like, I think if I would have stayed home and, you know, just gone to meetings, I would have drank, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would not recommend this to everyone, but for me, I know I still needed to go out and have fun. and just kind of figure out what that meant for a 21, 22, 23 year old kid. So, and I see some people struggle with that even in recovery, you know, they don't trust themselves going to concerts. They become workaholics. They don't know how to kind of just turn it off. And, you know, and I'm just like, look, you're allowed to have fun. Just because they take away the alcohol doesn't mean they're taking away the fun. And, you know, that is, you know, a big part, I think, of what kept me out of that self-pity, which we're all prey to, especially at early sobriety. And I think that's what takes early sobriety out more than anything else, is some type of self-pity. You know, this is no fun. I'm going to go drink or use. And I kind of had that moment like, hey, here's the magic wand. How would you help people within their first year of their sobriety? I was like, you know, teach them how to have fun.
Yeah. And having that exposure is so important. This is something I moved to Los Angeles when I was, I think I was just 21 and I was there for 10 years. Now in that time, my drinking, obviously it's progressive, right? So by the time I moved from LA at 30, my drinking was at a much more serious stage, but I still hadn't really gone off the deep end yet. You know, I right. went off the deep end shortly thereafter, but in LA, this is one of my favorite things to think back on, because in my 20s, the majority of my 20s, I was not out of control at all. You know, I was a pretty new drinker. I didn't really start drinking until I was about 20 or 21. So I didn't have any tolerance. I wasn't going crazy. I wasn't getting in trouble. I wasn't blacking out. I didn't have any of that for a long, long time, right? So there was a lot of my 20s that was fairly fun. It's a lot of wasted time, but it was fairly fun.
Right.
But I had this exposure because I was in LA where the recovery community is phenomenal. I had these little pieces of exposure to different things. Like I was a bartender, and almost everywhere I worked, the bartender next to me was sober and in the program, or the cocktail server was sober and in the program. So I had all this exposure to that so that it didn't seem weird to me. We also, my friends and I, my very best friends, we were motorcycle people, right? We rode motorcycles everywhere. And we went to a lot of the motorcycle festivals and things like that. And there were always sober biker, you know, people, like groups,
right.
We're all just sober people, right? So all those little pieces for me were so huge when I got sober, because it's like, I didn't have a lot of those barriers to overcome mentally, right? And worrying about like, am I ever going to have fun again? And that kind of thing. Cause I had just seen all of this sort of normal life from people that were sober. So I didn't ever think of it as there were a bunch of things I couldn't do. You know, I never thought of it as losing a bunch of activities or fun things. It just, that didn't equate for me.
Right. That's, I think, what is kind of the biggest stigma stopping people from getting sober.
Yeah.
You know, is this idea that the fun's over and my life is over. And it's been really interesting doing it with my daughter, having her come with her sorority sisters, and, you know, and she's made comments like, you know, anyway, she's not in recovery, doesn't need to be in recovery. She's 22 now. She does drink, but it is not an issue at this time, fortunately. But she's made comments like, hey, we've learned we don't need to pregame something to go to an event.
Right.
You know, she was able to do a sober support tent on New Year's Eve at this music festival called Decadence, where I am sure I never wanted to be around my parents on New Year's Eve, right? Because I was getting my drink on, and it was not going to be just a couple drinks. So I think, you know, it's been really not life-changing, but I think my kids have really changed because they've been able to see this community pop up that's having a, you know, just as much fun, if not more, than the people around them at different sporting events, having that kind of fun.
And not having all the guilt and shame and regret the next day and being mad at yourself and embarrassed and having to make apologies. You know, I always call it the apology tour that you have to go for whatever your behavior was the night before. You know, like, I don't think anybody misses that stuff.
So it's weird being a parent. Like, how do you kind of teach your kids a healthy respect and responsibility for alcohol and drugs, you know, without seeming, you know, totally hypocritical, because you know that I was doing it, at least, you know. So we have this thing in my house. I'm like, look, this house is sober AF. And that means no one's getting drunk, no one's getting high, and no one's getting pregnant. And early on, my son would host poker nights when he was like a freshman in high school over at the house. And I'd say, look, I will buy you guys Red Bull. I will buy the pizza. I don't care if you vape, but just nobody gets high, nobody gets drunk. And we were kind of the weirdos. It felt like the other parents would drop their kids off with $20 for, you know, or $10 for the poker night. And they knew their kid would be up till 3 a.m. having, you know, normal kid fun. And they knew they weren't going to get high or drunk. And then you kind of fast forward 3 and 4 years later, I'm getting calls from these parents like, hey, you know, Jimmy got in trouble. He got a hold of a brownie and the cops were called and the brownie had weed in it and the ambulance ended up getting called. And, you know, kind of having, how do we have this culture where people know that they can have fun and without drugs and alcohol? And how do you really express that? Versus, you know, just assuming these kids know that when, you know, that's they're watching their parents drink and, you know, that's some part of passage of life. And, you know, much like you want your kids to, you know, have a boyfriend and a girlfriend and have a good experience there, but, you know, you don't want them having, you know, an early pregnancy because you didn't have that conversation with them beforehand.
Right. So for you in your own recovery, first of all, I have to say, like, you must be really an extrovert because you're talking about going to these music festivals. And I'm like, how do you even stay up that late? like, this sounds terrible for an introvert. I want to go to bed. I want to read a book.
I get but so much energy from it. We, on New Year's Eve, had 200 people, mainly 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds at an Avalanche game. And then we walked across the street to a music festival that had 10,000 people. And we hosted a sober support tent at this EDM music festival called Decadence. And I was the last of the team there at 4:30 in the morning, having a great time, right? And it was great. There was this group of kids walking by me as I'm kind of cleaning up our tent. And they're like, have a good night, sir. I was like, oh, that hurts a little bit, but
I know. Right. Okay. I remember the first time I was in a department store and somebody called me ma'am. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I guess I'm at that age. Yeah. I guess
it
I'm there.
It kind of hurts, but it's kind of
hurts, but I get it.
Right.
So for you in your own recovery, what would you say has been your most challenging time? And you don't have to give us a ton of details if you don't want to, but what's been your most challenging time and how did you get through it without drinking?
So there's probably 4 or 5 of them in there. You know, I'm now sober 31 years. You kind of look back and there's, you know, all these different lives that you've lived in your sobriety, right? I had kind of this 2 years of going back to college at 21 to 23, sober and not really knowing anyone in that college who was sober, and making a couple friends who were sober made all the difference in the world. So there was definitely, you know, kind of some awkwardness of being in a new town, trying to make new friends and being sober and, you know, being, you know, what I felt like was, you know, the only guy who really wasn't drinking. But like I said, made a couple of friends and that made all the difference. You know, I think kind of you go that transition of a new getting out of college, new job. I remember I was working on a NASDAQ trading desk in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and it was really fast-paced New York-style trading desk, and just feeling like, how am I going to be friends with these people if I'm not, doing drugs or drinking? And that was a little bit of a culture, especially when you're so young. Like, how do you understand that, you know, this differentiator is actually an asset and not a liability? Because it kind of felt like a liability at the time. Like, I am so different than these people. And then at one point you realize, look, they don't care. There's more drugs for them or more alcohol for them. You may think it's about you, but it's really not about you. I went through a divorce that was kind of awkward. I think you kind of go through some disappointment like that. You're looking for somebody to blame. We know resentment is the number one killer, and, trying to deal with that. I think there's a certain way you have to live to be able to stay sober. Right. And we only learn that by making the mistakes and either drinking or not drinking, and then making amends if you don't drink. So, kind of looking back at some of these, darker times, you don't really realize it until it's in the rearview mirror more than anything else.
You're kind of in survival mode, I think, when something's happening, right? When you're in a really heavy time,
right.
You're kind of in survival mode. It is always looking back on something that it makes much more sense, or even that I can recognize how badly I really felt, like looking back on something, I go, wow, I was in a really bad spot, but I didn't recognize it in the moment because I was just trying to get through it.
Right. When my daughter was born, she had meconium in her lungs, and they told us she may not make it. And she was rushed from Boulder Hospital down to Children's Hospital in Denver. And, she spent the first 8 days of her life there. And you just kind of wake up and you just kind of walk through that experience, and you're expecting, happiest day of your life. It's your first child. And then you kind of walk through, oh my God, this kid may not live. And you're just fortunate for your friends who do show up for you. And then, you bring the kid home, and then she's the fastest kid in the soccer team. And, it's all rearview mirror stuff. And then you are reminded of, like, oh my God, do you remember when they said, she may not live? And you're like, huh, that was a tough 8 days kind of getting through. But to your point, you're in that survival mode, and then you can kind of be relieved and realize it is behind you.
Yeah. What do you hope to see for Sober AF Entertainment in the future? How do you want to see it grow and evolve?
So for 2.5 years, it's been kind of a top heavy, meaning myself and the board have been doing the majority of the work, hosting Sober Tailgates. We were in LA for the Notre Dame USC game in 2018. We're also out there in 2019 for USC UCLA. We were in Maryland for Penn State Maryland. And anyway, so we've done this amazing 64 sober support movement. And what we've kind of learned over the last 2.5 years is, it's needed, it's wanted. How do we make it really a national do-it-yourself sober meetup where anyone can host their own sober tailgate, and they can go to our website and say, hey, I'm going to host a sober tailgate for the Kansas City Chiefs game. And look for us. We'll be at mile marker, or we'll be at pole G in section 4. And, they can contact the venue or the sports team to see if they can get discounted seats together. So really that for me is kind of the long-term vision, is more of a national recovery support accelerator. So anyone anywhere can kind of host their own for a sporting event and for a music. This past summer, when COVID hit, everything got shut down, we went out and decided that we were going to host a virtual music festival. So we hired 70 bands and over 5 days showed these different bands, and they would all say, thank you, Sobre F Entertainment. And then we would stitch in between the bands a public service announcement on like drug addiction or suicide prevention. So we had 27,000 people watch. And then we did another one in, so that was May. We did another one in June and then and a third one in July. So we had a total of 130 bands over these three different festivals. And it was all done on Twitch. And we had 40,000 people watch.
Wow. That's incredible.
After doing all these events in person, we did those three virtual ones. And we had 10 times more people watch the virtual one than the in-person one. So I would say for Sobre AF Entertainment, my goal is to get our Twitch account every Thursday night running starting New Year's Eve for 1 or 2 hours, have a bunch of different recovery bands, have them tell their stories a little bit and use that as the megaphone of, hey, there is recovery support out there. And then starting hopefully springtime, we can start going back to hosting events and be at a bunch of different music festivals and a bunch of different concerts. But ideally, we throw 40 events a year and the community throws another 300 events on their own. And then people can find each other that way.
Now, will you help people like with calling, like if somebody in Kansas City wanted to do an event at a Chiefs game, would you help them navigate like how to reach out to the organization and try to get tickets? Like I'm trying to think like what would hold me back from doing something like this? And that alone would be super intimidating to me. But well, first of all, I don't like football at all, but to,
so what do
but
you
thinking
like?
About like calling and trying to, trying to make a deal on some tickets, whatever, right. Like is just not, that would hold me back, right? So do you help if somebody reached out to you and said, I'd like to do this, but I don't really know next steps or what to say or how to do it or who to call? Will you help guide people in that process?
So yes, we would love to help. And we have this past summer, we had help a group purchase 500 tickets to a Detroit Tigers game and another group buy 40 tickets to an Atlanta Braves game. And unfortunately, we can't really brag about it because they both got canceled. But
right.
We were there and, you know, the group that wanted to do the event in Detroit was going to throw out the first pitch. We were going to try to get Macklemore to sing the national anthem. We were going to make this a really amazing recovery night. It was going to be July 1st. It was a Wednesday night. It was before the World Conference was going to happen in Detroit. So we had big plans. So the answer is yes, we're here to help.
Okay.
We're 2.5 years old. Ideally, what we want is to be able to send a box to somebody that's an ambassador and say, hey, you and two of your friends can host this. Here's kind of the policy and procedure. We'll help put it on the website so people know about it. And here's some balloons that you can put up that, you know, kind of the yellow balloon is typically a symbol of recovery support at a music festival. So okay. If you see yellow balloons at a music festival, it typically means, hey, go check in with those guys. They're there to help you stay sober if that's what you're looking for. So that is what our nonprofit is out trying to accomplish. So
I love that. I think it is so needed. This is such a necessary thing. And, you know, when I was talking to you a week or so ago when we were planning on recording, one of the things for me that's really fun having the podcast and having this platform and being able to reach so many people is really spreading the awareness of all of the things that are available to us as sober people. You know, we don't have to not go have fun and not go to the concerts and not go to the games. We can do all that stuff. And it's much more fun doing it with a group of other sober people. So I love getting the word out about nonprofits exactly like this. I think this is such a great idea. And there are some other ones I think you and I talked about. There are some other ones. I've seen it in college football. And But I think you're doing it on a much larger scale and with, you know, better reach, it sounds like.
Well, I would say we're trying to do it at music and sporting events. And really our goal is to support whatever's already out there. So there's certain music festivals, like the largest music festivals in the United States, typically have recovery support in there by a group called the Harmonians. So, you know, we are here to help them find volunteers. They're at 15 or maybe 20 of the largest music festivals, but there's 850 music festivals. So, I mean, basically our grassroots movement needs everyone's help. So, you know, ideally it would be great if there was a local sporting event or concert in your area that you wanted to host. You can go to our website, which is soberafe.com. Contact us. We're in the process of kind of building the calendar, and ideally we're figuring out how do we get different recovery support at the event. So we'll walk you through it, but really that's the goal, is much like we were doing this summer with the 40 tickets at the Atlanta Braves game and the 500 tickets for the game that was with the Detroit Tigers, is, you know, how do we help the community help itself? And you don't have to have, you know, 40 people. If you got 20 people, call us. If you just want to try it out and just do the tailgate part, that's also great.
Yeah, definitely. So tell everybody one more time your website.
Sure. So we are, so the website is sober, soberafe.com. And perfect. So it's Sober AF Entertainment is the Facebook page and the Instagram page.
Awesome. And I will link that in the show notes for everybody to find as well. Duke, thank you again for doing this episode with me. I'm sure our paths will cross again. I love what you're doing. I love this idea. And I'd love to, hopefully maybe some of the listeners are going to get into this and want to do some stuff. And we are planning our first in-person Addiction Unlimited event.
Right on.
Hopefully coronavirus will allow. And, but yeah, I hope that some of our listeners might get in on this and enjoy doing something like this in their cities for their shows and things like that. So,
well, our Twitch page is Safe Music Festival. So you can find us on Twitch there. And we are in the middle of negotiating a sober tailgate at the Super Bowl, which is February 6th. So that may also be some type of virtual component. We're speaking with the drug czar next week, trying to figure out if we can get some promotion and funding support. So there is going to be some money in promotion of something like this going forward. So feel free to reach out to me. As a nonprofit, we can help you get the half off tickets. So really excited about that. And, you know, I think the timing is just right. This is so needed. We just need to make it wanted. How do we make it cool enough that it's wanted it? And, you know, people feel that it's a cool secondary culture to be able to do stuff like this. I mean, recovery's changed so much during our lifetime.
So much. I mean, just in my sobriety, you know, I think even just in the last 10 years of my sobriety, it is so different. It's a whole different world.
I think people are being okay with being different. You know, it's kind of the, you know, I was definitely kind of the weirdo sober kid in college and in early job stuff. And now nobody really cares, right? You're different. Yeah. We're all a little different and everyone kind of embraces that.
Well, I think it is much more acceptable now to be in control of yourself and your life too. You know, I feel like the last couple of decades, it was very popular to be out of control and a drunken mess and like vomiting on your friends. Like that was cool. But now I think that it's swung completely back the other direction, where it's very cool to be smart and responsible and make good choices and, and have control of your life, right? Like, that's very cool now. People are eating healthier than ever and exercising more. People are getting sober much earlier in the game. Like, not everybody has to have a horrible, desperate rock bottom moment, right? People are quitting that much earlier in the game. So yeah, I think it's very cool. And in all the things that I did as a drunk person and how cool I thought I was and how sophisticated I thought I was because I was hanging out in all the coolest places and going to the coolest parties and I always worked at the coolest bars, it's amazing to me that all the things I thought I was then, I actually am now as a sober person, right? Back then, I totally missed the mark on all of it. But yeah, but now I've got it down. So yeah, it's the best of all worlds.
It really is. You know, I say, like, going to college sober is like cheating. Like, there's so much stuff that just not holding you back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks again, Duke. It has been a pleasure having this conversation with you, and we will stay in touch and do some follow-up too. So thanks for coming on.
Can't wait to have some fun in LA.
Me too.
Yes.
You've reached the end of another great episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. Candid and honest conversation about addiction and recovery. Be sure to visit us at addictionunlimited.com to join the conversation and access show notes and links to everything we talked about. Love this episode? Please take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to help us improve and give you the information you want. Thanks for listening. See you next week.